So the Nolan Show can reveal a total of 357 operations have been cancelled in our hospitals here in just over a month. The worst at Craigavon and Daisy Hill Hospital in the Southern Trust saw 222 operations cancelled there from the start of December. The Nolan Show asked our five health trusts how many operations were cancelled between December 1st last year and January 4th this year, so just over a month. And we did this after County Down mother of five, Alison Chesney, brought her story to us last week. Now, Alison has been waiting for a knee replacement surgery and has had her op at Craigavon Area Hospital cancelled twice.
So I don't just feel I'm disappointed because they cancelled my operation. I'm disappointed because I have waited 2 years for my operation, and for the first chance that I get, it's cancelled. You know, they knew Christmas was coming. This happens every year. The fact that they can't give you another date, I feel my life is on hold at the minute. I'm just in limbo. I'm in pain all the time. My mobility is really bad. I take really strong painkillers, which I prefer not to, but I've tried not taking them, and it's a difference. I've been able to walk a bit and not walk at all. So yeah, my life is quite miserable at the minute.
On the line, Unison rep for Craigavon Hospital, John Creaney. We also have the SDLP MLA, Dolores Kelly, and the GP, George O'Neill. Good morning to all three of you.
Good morning, Finney.
John, we'll start with yourself first. You know, we've talked about similar situations before, but just why are we at this point now? Hello, John, can you hear me? We'll come back to John in just a moment. George, we'll go to you instead. Like I mentioned, we talk about this quite often in terms of the pressure that is on our health service and how we try and rectify that. How concerned should we be given what's happening across the water in England, for example?
Well, I think we're facing exactly the same problems as they're facing across the UK. These are routine operations which are cancelled. It has causes distress to patients, as we've heard, not only to patients but to their families. Also, the condition may worsen and the treatment may not be as effective if they're delayed. So what we have to look at is how we can improve the situation. And there are examples whereby if you separate the acute, that is the emergency stuff, from the routine operations, have them in two separate sites, you're less likely to have your routine operation cancelled.
Well, let's break down some of these figures. The Western Trust, for example, 76 is their figure for that month that we asked for. 56 of those were non-urgent. However, they give us a slight more breakdown in that same period. 20 of those 76 were urgent but non-cancer operations. The Southern Trust, 222, and they are relating that high number to the pressure on the service in that month in general, higher demand than expected through their doors. Belfast Trust, 19 elective cancellations. Northern Trust, 34, not emergency. And then the Southeastern, 6 cancellations. It's unusual, Dr. O'Neill, when you look at that there's such a huge variation across our health trust, from 6 in the Southeastern Trust to 222 in the Southern Trust.
Well, I'm not on top of all the figures, and I don't have all the figures. What I do know is that if you have the acute, that is the emergency stuff, and the routine operations on the same site, the chances of having your procedure, your routine procedure, cancelled is quite high.
Are you aware how that works across our trust? Is that the case in the Southern Trust?
I am not sure but I've seen some figures which suggest that there's a significant difference between the various trusts which you have just outlined. So what we really have to look at is how we can change this and how we can improve it. I do know at the department there's work going on at present where they're trying to arrange a regional elective care system whereby the sites where these routine procedures will be carried out and will not be interfered with. And remember, as was pointed out earlier, winter occurs every year. We know this is going to happen. Flus, coughs and colds appear every year about the same time. We really need to grasp the transformation which is required following Bengoa. And also, Minister O'Neill produced her 18 time-specific action points, which give a template, which give a pathway for us to take to improve it.
Okay.
What we lack at the moment is leadership in the system to take this on. And this smokescreen that we need the return of politicians to deliver this. let's make a decision where someone takes charge of this and delivers what we need.
So, George, who should take charge of that? Because it's easy to dismiss the fact that there are no politicians who would usually make these decisions. You know, the health minister, for example. So are we saying that all the responsibility must then fall on the civil servants, who have made it quite clear, they've said that they are not prepared to implement new policy?
Vinny, I've been about a long time. Yes. I was direct ruler from 72 to 98. I met lots of English ministers, health ministers. They were in office but not in power. The system was run effectively by senior civil servants and by people from the Health and Care Board.
So what do you think makes it different at this point then?
What we need is, for example, like the chief constable, who has total control over operational day-to-day matters in the PSNI. We need someone who can do that in health and social care. Otherwise, what will happen is our problems will be repeated again and again. How many times have I been in your program talking about this? How many times have we heard this? There's lots of work going on at present that we don't know about, but we need somebody to push the button to trigger it and to have the transformation which is required. And remember, Vinny, I said again, we're all patients. We all have been, will be, or are patients. This is important for all of us.
Is it unfair, though, to say, George, that you know our civil servants should be making those unilateral decisions, or is that not really beyond the pale?
All I can tell you is that my experience has been, and I've had local ministers, direct rural ministers, they're in office but not in power. It is an oligarchy of senior civil servants and administrators of health and social care who deliver and decide what happens.
Do you see any difference in that we're not in direct rule, we're not being governed by Stormont to that extent, that we're in this limbo?
I think it's a smokescreen to suggest that we need a local administration or direct rule to deliver what we know about. We've had enough reports going back to Maurice Hayes. We've had Transforming Your Care. We've had the Donaldson Report, the Bengora Report. I mean, do I need to go on and on about this? We've had volumes written about this. We know what has to be done. Someone has to step up to the plate.
So what's the point in having a health minister then, you know, whenever things were the way they were, or indeed if they do get Stormont back up and running?
Often the question I ask myself.
Okay, well, that's maybe another discussion. John Crean, I want to bring you in at this point. You are the Unison rep for Craigavon Hospital. What are your members on the ground saying to you?
Basically, they're saying due to the increased pressure and the lack of funding for many years and cuts, there are currently a crisis point. Some staff want to leave the profession. They've had enough and they feel that they're burnt out.
It's a pretty dire picture if you are one of those people waiting. 222, it's easy to say, well, look, that's, you know, in the grand scheme of things, when you compare it to the likes of England, and we're talking thousands, but that's 222 people, 222 families, and the impact that then your ill health or whatever it might be, everything from, you heard from Alison there, from her knee and the painkiller she has to take, the fact that she cannot get around as well, to something that maybe is bed confining or stops you from doing your job. There's a huge impact from even one of those cancellations.
Yeah, there is an absolute impact, but the fact is that the departments need to be safe and properly staffed.
So what's the answer?
The answer is that we need Stormont up and running.
Well, you heard what George said there. He says our civil servants are in those positions at this moment. They have control of the purse strings, so they should be making these decisions. They should be moving things forward, even when it comes to things like reforming our healthcare.
But unfortunately, we can't do that currently at the minute because we can't reform, because there is no government.
Austerity, George, you know, across the UK is obviously having a huge impact on this. And you could make the argument that's just going to make it worse.
It certainly hasn't helped. But remember that inflation in the health service runs about between 6 and 7% per year. Over the last few years, we've had maybe, if we're lucky, an increase of 3 or 4%. So there's been a significant shortfall. I'm minded that this was predicted by Michael McGimsey when he was the health minister some years back, and he was castigated for suggesting it. But what he discussed has come to pass. By this time, we would have a significant shortfall in funding right across health and social care. So the austerity has contributed to the problems we have, indeed. But throwing money at it is not going to solve the situation.
Oh, come on, though, George. It's going to help, surely. That's what we hear. Budget restrictions and the confinement that follows.
then it will help, but it will not solve the problem we have. And we have a document of transformation that we can use as a template to improve things so we all can benefit from it. And all of us who work in health and social care will probably have to change the way we behave and the way we operate to make things better for the people who use the service.
You might be affected yourself this morning. Maybe you are one of those 222 people from the Southern Trust. Maybe it's Belfast, Northern, Southeastern, or indeed the Western Trust. 030 30 80 55 55. Dolores Kelly from the SDLP. George mentioned it there. Winter comes around every year. The flu comes around every year. In fact, we've had it worse in terms of people badly affected 2009, 2010. So why is this happening now? And is it really down to the lack of politicians in control?
Well, I think from what I can hear, and I've listened to a number of people affected, both from the staffing side and from patients who've had relatives' operations cancelled. And it's a complex picture. One is there's not enough staff. Two, there's not enough beds. Three is that there are not enough support mechanisms within the community to allow people to be discharged safely to the community, and therefore they're retained in hospital beds inappropriately. I also do believe that George is right in saying that winter pressures do come around, and we were assured, and they say we, the community and other public representatives at a trust board meeting last autumn, that the Southern Trust had adequately prepared its strategy for the winter pressures. So I think they've been caught out, that they haven't. And there's also, you know, this system doesn't operate on its own. You know, there are other factors that feed into how health service is actually able to deliver.
What about, we mentioned it earlier, Dolores, in terms of civil servants maybe taking more control, making decisions when it comes to reform. Is that something that you think they should be doing? Because obviously, if you do, it makes the likes of yourself and other politicians a little bit pointless.
Well, I think this is the first time we've been in limbo for such a long period of time. And the civil servants, it's unfair to blame them. It suits some politicians for the civil servants, or indeed direct rule ministers, to take some of the tough decisions that have been recommended within Bingo and indeed the Donaldson report. But they don't have legislative cover, so it's not as simple as that. But what does need to happen is that the new Secretary of State needs to get to grip with her portfolio very, very quickly and get an independent chairman in place and all-inclusive talks. As our party leader said, there is no honeymoon period available to her.
Is that really going to make much of a difference? Like, what difference will that make given the year we've just had?
Well, I accept the argument that some have made that it won't transform things overnight, but there are huge issues. There are a stack of decisions, as I understand it, in terms of policy directives, in terms of budget spend, awaiting any new health minister that could be signed off pretty quickly, which would start the ball rolling, so to speak, in terms of some of those recommendations. I mean, some of them are around giving community pharmacists more cover and resources to
make. Are these all sticking plasters, though, Dolores? We've heard the phrase radical reform many times before, and we just seem to rumble along and nothing really seems to happen apart from we get the waiting list getting longer and then the likes of these cancellations last month.
Well, some of them are, but they would see, some of them are small improvements, but they would see, if you were one of the people that could go to your pharmacist rather than have to wait 3 weeks in your GP, it would make a difference to your life. So some of them are very small steps, but those could be made very rapidly. The bigger decisions, the tougher decisions, would have to be made collaboratively across government. And the SDLP leader, Colm Eastwood, has said on numerous occasions, we would not play politics with around some of the tough decisions that need to be made around a collaborative style government and executive. And that's where we went wrong in the past.
Okay, stay there for just a moment, Dolores. George O'Neill, I know you have to go shortly. Just before you do, you know, 50,000 operations cancelled in England for most of January. You know, what is it that's fueling all of this and the issues behind it? And in terms of the demand on the health service, is it that we're all living a bit longer and therefore we have the health issues as a result?
It's one of the factors, but also, I mean, Derek Wanless produced a report in 2004 for Gordon Brown looking at the health service. And he put the myth to bed that it was the elderly that caused the health service the most money and the most consumed most of the time. Look, it's in the last 6 months of our lives, be we a premature baby or we be somebody in our 90s, that we cost the health service the most money. Where the problem lies is that we spend so little on health promotion and disease prevention. We have to engage fully with the community to get encourage people to look after their own health and to improve the outcomes. Now, we also have problems by closing beds. We have fewer beds per 1,000 head of population than anywhere else in Europe. And this has resulted in a really high occupancy rate of our beds. The occupancy rate should be about 85%. It must be in the 90s. And this causes all sorts of problems for patients, for staff, and for those delivering the service. So there's demand. Yes, it's increased. We don't manage capacity very well, and we've nobody in charge of the system. So my appeal is that somebody takes charge of this and delivers what we know what has to be delivered.
Okay, Dr. O'Neill, thank you very much. Dolores Kelly, before you go, you know, you've heard what George has said there. What's your message to our civil servants? Because I don't want it to sound like we are blaming them for the issues there. They have said, look, we don't want to take on the responsibility of that radical reform. That is a job for our politicians, for a health minister. So what's your message to them?
Well, I think there's two points I'd like to make. And first off, the civil servants should be supported in whatever decisions that was in their power to give. But my message is not primarily for the civil servants. The message has to be for the parties and for the Secretary of State to start to think of the whole of Northern Ireland, of all of the people, all of our citizens, and to make the compromises that are necessary. After all, we've heard that the two big parties were almost there last September. They had both made compromises, both shifted a long way. So what happened in the interval? Secondly, I would like to agree with George in terms of individual responsibility and society in terms of the health service. I'm hearing that over the last month, many people unfortunately have been admitted to hospital following overdoses or as a consequence of alcohol abuse. So we're not getting the message out in terms of public health and individual responsibility.